Okay, I feel very good about our progress so far. I think we are carving a coherent plan out of the work to be done. And at this point, we'd like to move to measures 249 and 250, outcome measures relating to hemodialysis adequacy. And Alan has reviewed both of these, so... Karen?
Yeah, I just want to bring this up and then we can move on, but we don't have any other new measures. So the thought was to go back to our schedule of dialysis adequacy, and I especially wanted to discuss 249 and 250 because they're basically the same measure with distinction that the last ESRD committee wanted with the residual renal function. CMS has not been able to implement that, so they're bringing both measures back. And I think it's worth a discussion whether evidence has changed any that we need that measure specified that way. Or so that's why I would like to have some discussion while you're all here about those two measures. We can then decide if we want to continue on with all of the outcome measures in that group. Or if there are, I'd like to just ask now if there are any other measures on our list that anyone has identified as a priority in terms of benefiting from discussion among the group. If that's an okay plan, then we'll move on with dialysis adequacy. And we need to start with the measure developer intros to those topics.
Oh, thank you, yes. And our thought also was perhaps to try to get some vascular access discussion in this afternoon because we've done a lot of phosphate and mineral metabolism of late, it feels like. So that may be where we head after we knock off some of the dialysis adequacy. Lauren?
Just one quick announcement. If anyone needs a shuttle this afternoon to the airport, BWI, or Dulles, please see Tanae so that she can make arrangements with the hotel staff to have your shuttle arrangements for you.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, I'm sorry to interrupt. This is Irene Irwell from IMS Health, and from what you just said, all of our measures are under minimal metabolism. So can I assume that they probably won't be discussed today?
I'm sorry, Lauren, what's your concern?
I'm with IMS Health, and all of our measures that were going to be discussed today were under mineral metabolism, and you just mentioned that you would probably go through dialysis and then vascular access next. So can it be assumed that ours probably will not be discussed today under mineral metabolism?
That's probably a safe bet. Could we email you if for some chance we think we'll get back to mineral metabolism?
Yes, of course. I don't know if Lauren is there. She definitely has my email address.
Yeah, Lauren.
Yeah, I'm here. I'll email you.
Okay. So.
All right. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. So I'd like to invite CMS, PCPI. Those two to introduce their candidate measures for dialysis adequacy.
Go ahead.
So my understanding is we're talking specifically about 0249 and 0250.
And we'll also...
The whole group.
We'll also try to do the peritoneal outcome measures as well.
Oh, okay.
So we'll try to focus on the outcome measures in this group.
Okay. Well, so very briefly, because of time constraints and you want to get through a lot of stuff, I'm Joe Masana from University of Michigan Kidney Epidemiology and Cost Center. Associated with Arbor Research as contract measure developers for CMS. And the adequacy measures that we submitted were seven in total, four related to hemodialysis adequacy and three related to peritoneal dialysis adequacy. But the centerpiece of all seven measures was the minimum targeted dose of dialysis for hemodialysis and peritoneal dialysis, respectively, largely because those are the measures that are intermediate outcomes that are relatively proximate to a primary outcome. So they are the most important, and they contain the the specifications from the corollary measure. So I think it's appropriate to focus primarily on those if you're short of time. And the only other point that I will make is particularly for hemodialysis, but for PD as well, these types of measures have been reported for a number of years, and if you look at the CPM data, there has been a progressive increase in the fraction of patients in the U.S. who have achieved these targets. And so one might be concerned that the performance gap criterion might be an issue. But you should keep in mind that most of the reporting of very, very high fraction of patients relates to a subset of patients that have multiple values. So it's a fairly constrained subset of people that have, for example, four values in a year in a facility. And so it may overstate the actual achievement. Some of the data that we included from CrownWeb has a somewhat lower fraction of patients achieving these targets. So we believe there still may be a performance gap depending upon how you what data source you use and how you define the set. Certainly because we believe that this intermediate outcome measure is proximate to a primary outcome, we believe there is real risk of backsliding or regression if we do not continue to monitor closely this one of many, but one certainly measure of dialysis adequacy, small solute removal. Thank you.
Thank you. PCPI.
Hi, I'm Deidre Joseph again with the AMA PCPI. Thank you again for the opportunity. Our two measures are 323, hemodialysis adequacy solute, and 321, peritoneal dialysis adequacy solute. Both were previously endorsed by NQF and are being submitted for maintenance. And the most significant change to the measures, as you will notice, is the removal of the process component of the measure, which is the plan of care. The work group decided to focus on the intermediate clinical outcome for these measures. And we have partially harmonized with the existing CMS measures. And our measures are specified at the physician level. The measures have also been tested for reliability and face validity. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so I'd like to, at this point, I'd like to ask Dr. Kleiger to say, I don't know if it works best to kind of put these up side by side or you want to do them one at a time.
We're going to set a record for accomplishment in time. So here it is. Measure 249, which is currently in place and we're being asked to renew it, is the measure of adequacy defined as all adults who've been on hemodialysis for 6 months or more and dialyzing three times a week, whose single pool KTV is more than or equal to 1.2 in the last measurement of the month using the GEARDIS or UKM measurements. This is what's already in place right now. Measure 250, I'll bring them up together, is the same measure, but with the difference being that it excludes people that have greater than or equal to 2 milliliters per minute of endogenous renal function, and it cuts it back down to 3 months instead of 6 months after starting dialysis. The reasons that the second were introduced would seem pretty clear. The endogenous renal function is already incorporated, for example, in our PD measures. And that level of endogenous renal function is approximately equal to what 3 times a week 1.2 KTV would provide. So it sort of would be a threshold. The problem is that it's a completely untested measure. Even though it is there, we don't have any data on testing of that measure. And so I'll get back to that after we talk about 249, but so everyone understands as we set the stage, with all of the potential wisdom and the possibility of making it similar to what we do with PD, it's a measure that's untested and currently we're really being asked and required by the new, as I understand it, by the new standards of the NQF to examine the testing of a measure. So I suspect, at least I for one think, we haven't fulfilled the basic requirement to examine that one yet. But we'll get back to that. So here in 249, the single pool KPV of 1.2, I want to just spend a moment looking, setting the stage for this. Many people have asked whether or not KPV urea is really the best test of adequacy, and that's really one of the underlying questions we have to address here. And if you're Dr. Ed Lowry, you've been screaming for a while that it's the wrong measure. If you're Dr. Frank Gotch or John DeGeertis, you've been screaming for a while that there's no better measure, and until a better measure comes along, this is what we need to stick with. Since this measure was first proposed and accepted in 2007, there have been really no substantial additional studies that would give us information on the question of whether this is the best measure or not, or anything more about that. So when we talk about the characteristics of the evidence, we'll really be talking, we'll be repeating the same discussion that was had in 2007. What's different now is that we have some testing that's been done that we'll have an opportunity to examine. So that's the perspective, okay? So why don't we go and talk about impact?
Okay.
So it looks like the preliminary reviewers agreed it was...
Sorry, yes. Preliminary reviewers there say that the impact is mostly high, and one person says moderate.
Any discussion?
Anyone else? Okay. Let's go. Let's vote for 1A. Impact, high, moderate, low, or insufficient.
Lorian, impact?
Hi. Vote early and often. Maybe we should try. Okay, well, that's
okay,
good.
Go ahead.
All right, 19 high, 1 moderate. Next, performance gap.
All right, so as we just heard that the developer quoted Crown Web, which is data from January of 2010 that examined this, indicated that 66% of facilities, and this is a facility-level measure, incidentally, 66% of facilities had 70% or more of their patients with that dose, suggesting that obviously a third of facilities have less patients than that 70% who fulfill the requirements.
And variability, was that also addressed in our submission? In other words, there may be some upper limit. Maybe 80% is the most you could ever do.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I know somebody else may have looked at the data, but I'm just thinking of what Joe Masana told us before about their own data and the different ways of looking at it. My interpretation looking at that is, despite the fact that there's clearly been improvement, that there's still a performance gap.
Alan, one of the questions that I have that I've raised before is the whether we should be using, or whether this measure should use, a single month value as opposed to several months. I don't think a rolling average is the right thing to do. But thinking about practice and I wanting to identify units or physicians that are outside of our expectations or outside of what would be considered quality, having a patient 1 month with a KT over V below 1.2 doesn't tell me very much. Having a patient who's 3 consecutive months below 1.2 tells me a lot more. I don't know whether that's addressed in here or whether that's something that we should be thinking about and trying to make sure that the measure does the right thing.
Right, when we get to the specifications, maybe we can examine that again.
They didn't put it in 1B2 about the distribution of performance, but I think on let me see if there was another place that they presented by quintiles. 2B,
right.
2.3.
Yeah.
There's some information about quintiles of performance that Lauren will bring up that will address.
Yeah, Peter was asking that, and it's
right.
When you look by quintiles, it looks pretty tight. There clearly has been improvement. But there are the gaps. You see it right there on the screen.
Okay. Just as a question of process, Karen, are we being asked to pass one or the other or neither, or we could pass both of these that are so similar?
Well, let me just give you the context, and I think Alan raised a good point about the next one not being tested, and we're in a different place than we were back in 2007, where a lot of the measures were untested. So we want you to give us advice on this. I mean, if this measure, for example, passes and it's adequate, then we don't really, and you agree that the other one's untested, it doesn't necessarily have to be recommended. That could be a recommendation for the next round, that if that's really an improvement of the measure, that the next time the measure comes back, that it actually capture the residual renal function. So I think we have multiple
okay.
options. In
and should they both pass, I guess then they'd be up as competing metrics.
Well, the way they had done it before, the way they were endorsed before, is 249 was supposed to sunset when they implemented 250.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that Crown Web never got going in order to implement 250.
Okay. Thank you.
So, yeah, that would be good.
Stephen?
Peter, the other difference was the 6 months and 3 months time frame that's in there. And I guess, I don't know whether you can have that discussion or not in here, but 6 months seems awfully long to start measuring this. And I have no reason, I have no idea why it's that long, at least in today's current world. And so I don't know whether that where that fits in the discussion of those two
probably
metrics.
Specifications would be
right.
The time to discuss that.
Right.
Okay.
So,
thank you for clarifying that. So we're getting to the point of voting on performance gap. Other discussions? Alan, your light is on. Does that mean you want the floor? Okay. All right, let's vote on performance gap.
And Lorian?
Moderate.
One vote for high, 19 for moderate, one low. So we can go to the body of evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the body of evidence is the same as the body of evidence was when this was first passed in 2007. It includes 11 or more studies that are retrospective observational trials showing a clear correlation between the dose of dialysis and heart outcomes, including in particular mortality. There are no randomized prospective control trials looking at this other than HEMO, and all of you know that in HEMO, the test was between essentially what this current recommendation is and a modestly higher, a 16% higher dose. And that in that RCT, there was no survival advantage. But all of the observational trials, as I say, have been clear and supported the fact that there is a correlation between outcomes, particularly in survival, and the dose. And that in many of the earlier trials, 1.2 as a single pool measure was picked because it was clear that at lower levels, and particularly at equilibrated KTVs of less than about 1, that the mortality was substantially higher. So that's what the quantity of those studies, as I say, is over 10. And the quality, which I'd be happy to, we can go on and people can talk about this, are all really in observational retrospective trials.
Okay, so can we vote first on the quantity of studies in the body of evidence? High, moderate, low, insufficient, based on our chart there. Go ahead.
And Lorian?
Aye.
Some of you may have voted too soon. Is that possible? There we go. We have 17 voting high and 4 moderate. Okay, now to the quality.
Just the one other thing about the quality I will mention is that the DOPS data in particular, if you examine it, and it is not actually an RCT, as you suggested before, but is very well done prospective work by facility and with stratification that makes it, I believe, very high-level evidence, although it's not an RCT. And that also has shown the correlation.
Alan, in all of these retrospective studies, where is the break point? My recollection is that it was really at 1 or 1.1.
Yeah, it's at 1 for equilibrated KTV. Single pool KTV is about 0.2 higher. So a 1.2 single pool is about equivalent to what the break point is in the equilibrated.
Okay, other discussion about the quality of the body of evidence? Jerry.
Question for Alan. Does the DOPS data on duration of dialysis as a separate correlate with inverse correlate with mortality come into play or affect this measure at all, or is it a totally separate issue?
Yeah, with the DOPS guy sitting in the back, I'm very reluctant. May I ask the developer to help us answer that question?
Sure.
So there is a published analysis by with Rajiv Saran, first author from the DOPS data, that looks at duration of session after adjusting for KT over V. And I can't remember if it was equilibrated or single pool KT over V, single pool, Alan's telling me, which did show an independent effect of duration of dialysis session. And that's one of 3 or 4 observational studies that show an independent effect of time after adjustment for single pool KT over V. So the answer is time may be a or duration of dialysis may be a separate predictor, but in my read of the literature, it doesn't invalidate small solute removal as well.
Okay, other questions, issues? All right, let's vote on the quality of the body of evidence. High, moderate, low, insufficient.
And Lorian, quality?
Moderate.
Okay, that's 21. The votes were 6 for high, 15 for moderate. And on to consistency. Any discussion before we vote? Okay, let's vote.
Lorian?
Moderate.
10 voted high, 11 moderate. So this would pass the
pass the evidence,
decision logic.
And it would pass importance. Go to the next slide.
And it would pass importance, right. Do we need to vote?
No.
No? Okay. All right, so...
And we don't need to talk about that. Okay.
So, scientific acceptability.
Okay, so for... I have 2 comments, and then I would really invite the others to join. First, in terms of specifications, one point that we discussed at our last meeting was that this is a single pool KTV rather than a standard KPV. And remember, the reason for that is single pool is useful if we're only comparing the same frequency of dialysis. So for all people on three times a week hemodialysis, it's reasonable to use this measure. However, we have an increasing number, although still relatively small, but of patients going home, going four times a week, going five times a week, going six times a week. And at some point, and the developers do point this out, it would be useful to change from a single pool KPV to a standard weekly KPV that will allow us to compare all of those different kinds instead of excluding people. So in terms of the specs, my recommendation is that this is fine as it stands, but let's recognize that and let's urge developers as we move forward to look at measures that will help with different frequencies like the standard KTV. So that's one specification issue. Then Jeff, you had another one about the frequency.
That I've raised before with some of these measures where whether it's patient variability or what have you, a single 1 month out of compliance metric doesn't to me necessarily indicate that there's a quality problem. The identification ought to be, I think, around the people who are persistently below some value. If the KTRV is 1.1 and you repeat and it's 1.4, or you that prompts a fistulogram and repair, then all the right things that happen. It's sort of what was talked about regarding the vitamin D and calcium mimetic. If you respond appropriately, then that should somehow be a part of the metric, I think, the performance measure.
Go ahead, Alan.
I just want to move on with the reliability questions because those are the specification questions. Are there any other?
The 3 months versus 6 months versus 1 month. I can we kind of clarify this for some of us? What how that all fits into the specifications? This is a monthly calculation, right?
Yeah, I mean,
and
the rationale...
To average it over 3 months or 6 months, I'm not...
No. I mean, the rationale originally was that you wanted patients to be stabilized and have appropriate vascular access and then have a reasonable measurement instead of doing it as soon as they start. But 6 months is a long tail, and with the next measure, which hasn't been tested, it was suggested to reduce that down to 3 months rather than to six. And indeed, I think that's a good recommendation if we were to pass this one, to ask the developers to consider making it 3 months instead of 6 months for this particular measure.
But as written, it's 6 months.
Correct.
Equal, okay. Jerry.
In addition to the type of vascular access and the duration after starting dialysis, there's going to be facility variation according to how high turnover that clinic is. With a lot of new patients coming in, there tends to be a higher percentage of catheters in the early time frame, and that's going to slightly skew the results downward, this measure, whereas a facility that has a very stable population without turnover should be able to overcome that.
However, that sort of favor, that if you had a 3 month window, then that would be another factor kind of urging addressing catheters early and often.
Right. That may have been behind the idea of the 6 month window measure. I don't know that.
Andrew.
Having said that, I agree with that completely, and with fistulas failing at a higher rate than we thought of, at least in some studies suggest, that would put a disadvantage again if you have a lot of new patients because fistula gives them another fistula. Now you're outside the 3 month window easily.
Okay, but I personally feel either of those would negate shortening that window. In fact, would put more attention on getting good access going or at an earlier point. Stephen, did you have any other concerns? Okay.
All right, reliability testing in this case was done, as we discussed before, by comparing two different time periods and showing a high Pearson correlation of between 0.89 and 0.98. So the correlation's real good, but it's not quite the same patients and it's not quite the same time frame. It's somewhere in between. So it's tough, but I guess my own thinking was I couldn't think of a better way to do this than that. And unless someone else had a thought about that, my sense was that in this case, that's not a bad reliability test.
Actually, and Lauren, if you could bring up the measure developer responses, CMS did do some reliability of the precision of the measure score that they submitted back to us in response to questions. So if you could bring that up on page 25. And what measure is this? 0249. Did you, I'm trying to, CMS, or Arbor, I was looking at this table and there's a measure number 0250, but was that really 49?
Yes, that's correct.
We apologize.
Okay.
It's on page 25 of our document.
So page 25. Do you want to just describe this?
So, we calculated some standard statistics of signals related to signals to noise, and for number 249, which is the one being discussed right now, the intra-class correlation was 0.34.
Right. So in the table, it's labeled 0250, but this is really 0249.
And we're sorry for that.
Okay, that's okay. I just want to get everybody on.
And there are various statistics that are useful for looking at this. The R squared is 0.35, and this represents highly substantial ability to distinguish between facilities. There are very substantial differences in a statistical sense, and you have also seen the distribution of values across facilities with regard to their achievement of this measure. So both with regard to intra-class correlation, which is good at 0.34, and the ability to see a signal between facilities in the face of patient-to-patient variation, this measure is very successful.
Okay. Again, just to wrap this up from my perspective, unless there's anyone else that had comments, the reliability asked us about the precision of the specifications, and I think they're precise. We might have suggestions for altering them, but they're precise, and you've just heard the rest of the reliability data.
So let's vote on specification and reliability. Everyone ready? Okay.
Florian, reliability? Florian?
Oh, I'm sorry. Hi.
Okay, that's 21. 12 voted high, 9 moderate. Validity.
All right, so the validity was looking at the quintiles of performance compared to SMRs. And here's where I'm going to invite Janet Welsh to make some comments, because she was the one who had the most concerns about this. But overall, if you look at the numbers, what it appears to be is that compared to the highest, or the best quintile, all of the others had statistically significantly worse mortality. It was not really well graded. It wasn't like the very worst mortality was the lowest quintile, and then it graded up from there. But clearly, the four less than optimal of the quintiles had a higher mortality than the highest quintile. So those were the validity data that were presented. Janet, you want to say some words about that?
That data looks like it's curvilinear, and I couldn't make sense of that in terms of validity data.
But it's just maybe there's a nonlinear relationship. I mean, it just may be that there's a nonlinear. I mean, I always tend to think linearly, but there are a lot of nonlinear biologic relationships. So
right. I mean, I must say, again, when we first talked about this measure and when it was first developed, we had no link, really, no effective link in testing between the measure and a hard outcome like mortality. This actually provides some of that data that is very helpful to, at least to me.
But once again, this is kind of one of these indirect measures of validity, right? I mean, in other words, the face validity, is this really measuring what it's supposed to be measuring, remains unanswered. I'm not saying I have a better idea, I don't. But once again, this has kind of come up, Karen, a couple times where, and it seems like overall the committee, this has been sufficient.
Right. I mean, validity is not definitive by any one test. It's something that you kind of build on over time. And it's, you know, when you're talking about especially the measure score, I mean, what we're most interested in is if you have a group of providers and you have scores, can you say, oh, this provider is better than that one because they have a better score than that one? That's, we really want valid, to be able to make valid conclusions about quality. And they're saying that one way that you could do that, because outcomes are what matter, people dying and living, and showing a correlation between having a score on this measure to a score on the mortality rate, it provides some demonstration that you're, you know, going to be making some valid conclusions. I invite others to kind of add to that discussion. Jerry?
I almost hate to bring this up, but we struggle with it at the networks. It's fairly well known that Dialysis staff will encourage patients to stay on their fully prescribed time, the one day of the month this is measured, and often throughout the month patients sign off early. So the only way to overcome this would be to get an average single treatment KQRV, which is really not very feasible, I don't think. So this is probably the best we can do, but I think that might...
It's a nonlinear function. You can't get an average. KPV will not be a valid measure, really. Yeah.
So that might explain some of this nonlinearity in the quintiles or quartiles.
I think that speaks to the issue of validity, you know, because it is, I think, the last measure of the month, and so, you know, that is definitely...
Well, what's the month? I think that's a very interesting observation. I guess you have to just kind of hope that the game playing goes on at about the same frequency at all units, you know, because I don't know how to get that out of there.
Noise,
really. Huh?
Well, we could be like CMS and walk in there and do a surprise visit and measure it unexpectedly, but that's not going to happen.
So I think that's a threat to validity, but it's one that we can't eliminate, and I don't think it overrides, does it override the value of the metric? Okay, other thoughts before we vote on, other issues before we vote on validity?
So let me just point up here, I guess the question about, you know, this, you'll be voting on the measure as specified, which is the per month. And so, the issue about wanting to change the metric, and it sounds like that's a validity question for you, Jeff, about, you know, doing a single measurement versus persistent. So your vote on this, if it passes here, would make the measure go forward as it is. So I'm just going to point that out so that we know. I know that we had that discussion on several metrics in the last project. Ultimately, they ended up going through as they were originally specified, but
I'm sorry, unless I missed it, the measure doesn't specify how frequently it should be measured. It doesn't say a month.
No, but isn't it
so
a
it
single
can be,
measure per month?
It gives a numerator and a denominator, and it says in the study period, unless I've missed it,
okay.
It doesn't say it can be three times a month. It can be, you know, it's whenever it's measured, this is the way to do it.
Okay. So, Bob, you want to clarify? Jeff's point was he was bringing up the persistent over several months, right? Okay. So, is it one measure per month, Bob?
A couple of issues. It is, I believe it's specified and it's intended to be specified as just one measure per month, and it would be the last dialysis session of the month.
2811, Bob, numerator statement says,
in 2A11 numerator statement, I think it says here, in the parenthetical statement is calculated from the last measurements of the month using urokinetic or DeGertis 2.
Of the month, sorry.
There's another question of what is the duration of the study period. It is intended so that it could be meaningful just with one cross-section of 1 month measured at any time during the year. It's expected that it may be reported for longer durations as well, but it is proposed that each patient month count equally as one patient month. So a patient who is there for 6 months would contribute 6 patient months. A patient who is only being treated at the facility for 1 month during that study period would contribute 1 patient month. Similar to, I think this is very similar to the discussion that took place yesterday, that if they're out of alignment for just 1 month, that would have less of an impact over a six-month study period than if they're out of alignment for all 6 months.
Okay. I would just suggest that we look very critically at the way it's actually written, because in my view, it does not say it's done every month. And if that's the intention, we just should make it clear that that's...
Right, and it also specified where it looks like patient is the unit versus month as the unit, as you were just describing.
It would be very helpful to me, maybe, if you could do the analysis in a way that, if you look at, for instance, SMR and KQ-over-V below 1.2 for 3 consecutive months, and whether that is a better predictor of mortality, because this doesn't just, I mean, the hazard ratios, if that's what it was, were statistically significant but small because of the large number of patients that you measured. So if there was much better discrimination by tweaking this measure a little bit, I think it would be more useful to us.
Thank you very much for the suggestions. And we have looked at that for some of the other measures, whether to roll them up and say, are they persistently low with regard to the outcome, and in particular for anemia. But I don't know if we have done the same analyses for KT over V. I believe not. But that is something to investigate. Thank you.
I might comment, though, because this is a facility-level metric, you might catch a patient here and there on a bad month, you know, or there may be some variability, but you would think that might average out, you know, in the statistics. Okay, I got raised hands. Yes, Bob?
One more clarification for Alan. The current implementation that is planned, to my understanding, with Crown Web, is month by month. So every single month there would be a report which would have 1 month worth of data in it.
I get that. And in fact, of course, that's what we've all been doing for many years. I'm just saying when I look at this specifications, it's not so clear here.
Thank you.
Okay. Are we ready to vote on validity now? Any other questions? Okay. Let's vote.
Lorian, validity?
Moderate. That's 21. We have 2 voting high and 19 moderate. Okay. So I think we passed the scientific acceptability of measure properties. Do we need to look at disparities in this case?
Yeah, I know we've been kind of hit and miss here, so I apologize. And I don't remember if we discussed it under performance gap, if there were any disparity issues.
Right. There were none that were described. They do break them out, and they show us the performance in various strata with no evidence of disparities.
And it seems like because... CMS is using race data for the mortality measure. They have the data that this could be applied here if needed to look at differences by race. Okay.
Yeah, the analysis can certainly be done, but there's no reason to think that race impacts the dialysis prescription per se.
So I would suggest this question is not relevant because it's an if question.
Right. Good.
Okay, on the usability, Alan?
So just really quickly, it's been in use for many years, and the evidence is that it is useful.
Thank you for being succinct. Any other comments on usability, either for a public reporting or quality improvement? I think we're ready to vote then. High, moderate, low, insufficient.
Florian?
Aye.
So we have 17 voting high, 4 moderate. So we can move to feasibility.
It has proven to be feasible.
Wow, that was 2 words less than the last time. Okay. I think that's a pretty solid rationale. Others? Okay. So let's vote on feasibility. High, moderate, low, or insufficient?
Florian?
Aye.
We're stuck on 20. Well, there's 21. Okay. So we have 21 high. Very feasible, apparently. Okay, so the next one is the overall, and we do need to vote on, does the measure meet all of the criteria to be suitable for endorsement and to review? I think it, each section it has passed. So, yes, no, or abstain. Let's vote.
Yes,
Florian? Yes.
So we have 21 yes. So it's 250. We need to go through the same.
So if I may, my recommendation is this. I don't think that this measure has the characteristics that will allow us to vote on it because it's been untested.
And I think that's an excellent observation. And so it could not pass reliability and validity, so there's really not much point other than, I guess, whether we want to make the recommendation. I'd like you to just at least have a discussion about whether it's valuable to add the renal residual function into a measure for maybe the next iteration.
Yeah, so maybe I can start that discussion, and it's a good discussion. Because it would make logical sense to do that. However, what's interesting is that I haven't seen any data that suggests that with or without that factored in affects any measured outcomes or change in outcomes. So if there is such evidence, it would be useful for the developer to bring that to us.
Isn't there evidence that I guess that's not really relevant to the point that...
Endogenous renal function is good. No
right,
question
right,
about that.
No, yeah.
But the question is whether this particular measure of adequacy is better if you factor in endogenous kidney function or not. My gut says it should be, but I'd like to see some evidence.
If I recall from the last project, the committee had suggested that be included along with shortening the time frame. I guess that was one of their issues of shortening the time frame. You might be capturing patients that still had... So I don't know. But I think that's a good question, and it's an outstanding question whether it really improves the measure.
Well, I think from earlier discussion, I think the sense of the steering committee was 3 months was better. And we'd all like to see some data about... the usefulness of putting that into the metric,
right.
Putting the residual renal function into the metric.
So I guess I let us go before we resolve that question. The current measure that we just passed, 249, is specified with after 6 months, right? And are you recommending or should that be changed to 3 months? And is your recommendation contingent on that? What, Bob?
One comment to reinforce that the data that was presented and was discussed was for the six-month exclusion measure. So that's what you've reviewed today, to this point.
So we're not recommending that they consider changing that particular...
No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, Joe is, of course, exactly right. So we passed the right measure and looked at the data for the right measure. But listening to what my colleagues on my right here said earlier, I do think it would be wise to ask them to consider if there is evidence to moving that to 3 months.
Would we have to look at more reliability data or anything for them to do that, or could they just make that change and still be an endorsed metric?
I guess that would be a question for you all. What would be the downside of having a shorter? I know we talked about the upside, is that it also provides, it's, you know, getting more patients in there. It provides an incentive to get the vascular access, but what's the potential downside?
If I understand correctly, the relationship between KTRV and SMR was based upon the six-month time frame. So we would need to see that the same relationship held with the same statistical significance and so forth at 3 months. And so we see that. I think it's hard to make a decision that a change should be made.
Okay.
So if I'm catching your drift, then we probably should not encourage them to change it because we'd have to look at some more testing of the data.
Right, I would encourage them to look at that data.
Yeah, that's right. I agree.
Say that again.
I would encourage them to do the analysis of 3 months with SMR or some other outcome and then come back and it may be a stronger relationship for all we know.
So if that could be accomplished in the next month or two while we're still in operation.
Right. So I guess where we would stand is the measure as it is can move forward, but yeah. We're going to put in a request to CMS and their contractor if they could do some analysis of changing that time period to 3 months, and we would be especially interested in looking at that relationship to SMR. Will that do it? Okay.
Okay. All right with everybody?
And unless anyone objects, we will not go any further with 250 because that measure is not tested, and if it turns out that that's the better way to do it, when they bring the measures back for next round of maintenance, they should incorporate that. Okay?
Okay. Thank you, Alan, for guiding us through all that. And I think we'd like to go to 323 next, the PCPI metric on hemodialysis adequacy solute, which is a re-endorsement.
Yes, and it's also a
physician level measure. And this was assigned to Michael Somers.
So this is a measure of renewal. It's looking at dialysis patients and the percentage of calendar months within a 12-month period when they have a single pool KT over V greater than or equal to 1.2. I think a lot of the general discussion that we just had on the last measure is going to be very applicable to this as well. If we look at impact, 4 of the 5 reviewers assigned it high. The measure stewards also had included some newer citations with evidence since the initial endorsement to reinforce the impact.
Okay, shall we vote on impact and then we can move on to the rest, discussing the rest of the measure? And Lorian, impact? Okay, go ahead.
20 voted high. There were no other votes.
Okay, in terms of opportunity improvement, although the measure developers acknowledge that the percentage of patients achieving this has been increasing, they did give evidence of a performance gap, not only between men and women. They also quoted some older racial data that had been in their initial application as well. I think that data is still probably applicable, even though there wasn't newer data mentioned in this application. They also alluded to some CMS PQRS data showing that 41% of patients didn't meet this standard in the period that they reviewed.
Thanks. Any other comments from the reviewers or the committee? Okay, let's vote on the performance gap.
Lorian, performance?
Okay. The voting, 4 high, 17 moderate. So this is not an outcome per se, so we go to the body of evidence.
So in terms of quantity of the data, they go back to the KDOQI guidelines. They allude to 87 articles that were abstracted or that were used initially for that guideline and 23 studies that were then used for the summary tables within that guideline. They also had some more specific comments about the HEMO study along the lines of what Alan discussed with the last measure as well.
Any other, first we'll vote on the quantity of studies. Any other discussion? Okay, let's vote.
Florian?
Aye.
That's 21. 17 voted high, 4 moderate. Next is the quality.
Again, I think our discussion with the last measure would be germane here as well. There was only the HEMO study that was the randomized control study.
Okay. Any other comments? Okay, let's vote on the quality.
Florian?
Moderate.
That's 21. We have 5 votes for high and 16 for moderate. And now the consistency.
Again, I think our comments from the last measure would also be applicable here since it's the exact same data.
Good. All right. Let's vote on consistency.
Florian, consistency.
Moderate.
Okay, 4 votes for high, 16 moderate, and 1 low. So this would pass with a medium, moderate, or high level for all 3.
Mm-hmm.
So it does pass the evidence decision logic grid.
Right.
And so the next question is, does this pass the importance? And because it did pass all 3.
Can I rechange it? Okay.
So, and,
right. Back to the importance. Yeah.
Right.
So it passed all 3.
All 3 were met, so I don't think we need to vote.
No.
Unless the committee feels differently. Okay. So let's go on to scientific acceptability, reliability, and specifications.
So the reliability was tested by some data abstraction from patient records from four clinical sites, part of the PCPI testing project, they showed a reliability that was 99.7%. It was inter-rater reliability that they were essentially testing.
Yeah, that's a good reliability test, I think we would say, right?
Yeah, as we discussed yesterday, the main issue is that it was tested with inter-rater reliability chart abstraction, but it's been implemented with CPT-2 codes, and they are proposing electronic record specifications. So there's a little bit of a mismatch there, but you'll have to apply your judgment to that.
Although one might think going from, claims data has its own issues,
right,
but going to electronic might also be an advantage. Any specification concerns?
Similar to some of the measures we discussed yesterday, when you go into the PDF that came with the initial measure, and some of the diagnoses included things that pertain to acute dialysis and not chronic dialysis.
Were electronic specifications submitted with this measure as well? And did anyone look at those? Did you identify any issues with it?
There were, again, like several of the measures yesterday, codes that correlate to continuous forms of dialysis and more acute kidney injury settings for dialysis.
So do we need to kind of separate those out for now and ask PCPI to come back? Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry.
Because KT over V isn't usually measured on a acute patient, do they sort of come out in the wash anyway? I guess I don't know. No one can tell us that for sure. But okay, so we'd like to have some review of the CPT code selections. All right, other issues? Assuming that's done, should we vote on reliability and specifications?
This is Lori. Can I ask one question of Ms. Burns about reliability?
Yes. Yes.
Using the CPT-2 code on the performance of these
I couldn't understand you very well.
I'm sorry. I know for some of the other measures there was some data available on how well the CPT-2 code performed, and since they're proposing to implement this using CPT-2 code, is there any data they could provide us on the reliability of the CPT-2 code? As opposed to the chart review, which does not appear to be the primary way this will be implemented.
Can you answer her concern?
I'll clarify again that the primary way it's going to be implemented is not, we are not recommending a primary way of CPT-2 codes. It is an option, just like the other measures. We did provide some data in there somewhere. The reliability is over 50% for the comparison between CPT-2 codes and going back in and manually extracting, but again, it's the same problem with billing on a monthly cycle, and the billing cycle may not be on the same cycle as the actual calendar month, so it's really hard to say, just because of the way the program's implemented.
So is the primary way this is going to be recommended to be implemented by manual chart review or by EHR?
The PCPI does not make a recommendation as to implementation. We simply provide the specifications for all available forms of implementation.
Right. The reality right now is this is being implemented using CPT-2 codes, correct? And is there any plan to implement it widespread using medical record abstraction?
We simply ask our specifications team to supply all of those different specifications for EHRs and for paper and for claims, but we're not sure how people will choose to implement them. So it is an option.
It needs to depend on the practice level, where the practice level is at that point. If there's still paper, they'll do paper, or they can have electronic, but the specifications are meant to be able to let them do electronic.
Right, and that's on an individual practice choice. But when we're talking about endorsing measures, it's from the standpoint that they will be used for both public reporting and quality improvement. So it does make a difference from standardization standpoint. If you were going to use this in your own practice for quality improvement, you could choose whatever works for you. Yes.
I mean, I guess all I can say for that is CMS does run the PQRI, PQRS program, so that's not our actual program, but we have seen historically that they go from claims-based measures to registry and EHR-based measures, so I don't know their thinking personally, but that is certainly a possibility that they might choose
right.
to do that.
I mean, in general, the idea is for all of healthcare to move towards electronic record measures. So, I mean, that's the push from CMS, HHS, NQF is very much involved in that. So, I mean, that's the goal, and we'd all like that. But the current status is in terms of the program, and I don't know, you may know more than I do, in terms of what the kind of projected timeline is for CMS, and I have no idea about that.
I did have some questions about computation of the variable, because, and I'm just looking at my note here, is that the denominator in the text is that it's all calendar months that patients are receiving hemodialysis three times a week. But on that e-specification document, the denominator is all patients identified with an initial patient population. So they don't seem like the values are the same. Did I miss something?
I think we already divorced the e-specifications, right? But I mean,
okay.
We definitely are interested in your feedback on those
okay.
e-specifications.
All
right. It's tough to,
then I missed
to
that.
Do them.
Okay. Okay.
We're separating those out for now. They'll come back to us with, if they can, with a crosswalk. Otherwise, for now, you'll be we'll be considering the measure with the medical record and the CPT 2 code specifications.
So another question that I had, the prior ones from CMS were facility level. This, if I understand it correctly, is physician level. And I'm not sure that the reliability or validity has been tested at the physician level. In other words, is it actually the right physician that's attached to that specific KT over V value?
That's what they provided in their submission, is testing at the physician level in four practices, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you bring up just a point that we'll have to deal with on a harmonization issue. These measures are specified differently. And the question is, you know, the facility level measure that we talked about is a patient level. This is months. And so we'll have to have a discussion about that, whether that presents any problems with interpretability, et cetera. But we'll set that aside for a later discussion when we get to harmonization issues.
So my takeaway at this point of the discussion on reliability is that chart extraction method has been tested and found reliable. We're expecting that in the long run this should be done more on electronic data, which is a good thing and is generally reliable, but hasn't been really tested fully. Is that a good summation?
Well, but what about the CPT-2 code finding? If people actually chose to implement this using CPT-2 code, that is one of the options being proposed, and the reliability does not seem very strong to me if I understand the data correctly, but I'd be interested in how other steering committee members interpret those statistics.
Right. So this is, they presented it under comparability of multiple data sources or methods in 2B6. I think this is that what you're referring to?
Well, I think if I understood the steward correctly, when they looked at CPT code, there was slightly higher than 50% reliability because there continue to be issues of claim forms lagging monthly. If I understood correctly, one of the issues that came up with measures yesterday, that it seems the CPT2 codes have some limitations because of monthly lag, and that there are some issues of reliability when you use them. But please correct me if I'm misunderstanding the presentation of the data.
Yes.
Yes.
If I may, we're not suggesting that the data reported by the practices using CPT2 codes is in any way wrong. We're just suggesting that because of their monthly billing cycles, the way our abstractors looked at it and the way they were recording it was different. But their month, blocks.
It's a different month,
the patient
right.
months were the same. We just were looking at different patient months than the patient months they were looking at, if that helps.
And I think the other point about this, and that's where you have the 64.9% agreement. Okay. The other thing to point out, this measure has changed from the time of endorsement. And so this testing was the prior measure that had the plan of care component, which was problematic anyway, but I don't know, do you have any sense of how this would play out with the revised measure?
Yeah, one thing that I will say is that we do see more and more physicians using the measures every year, so they must be getting something out of them. I wish we could provide more data, but CMS is not able to provide it yet.
Can I just, I hate to belabor the point, but just, I'm not seeing where it's documented on the individual physician level, the reliability.
So you're talking about attribution, really.
It's real, yeah. Is it Jeff Burns seeing that patient that month, or is it reliable at the facility level or the shift level? Maybe I'm just not getting something.
To speak to the PQRI program, I believe that the physicians self-report for their own patients, so that isn't a problem in the PQRI program, if that makes sense, the way the measure is done.
The individual charts were done by physician, went into that physician's chart, they extracted information to see if it was congruent. So it was done through that individual physician, not through the group. That's how the extraction happened with all the ones we presented.
So with chart abstraction, obviously, you know, you're not doing any kind of algorithms to see which patients belong to which physicians. You're going to the physician's office and looking at charts. With the PQRS or PQRI program, physicians are self-reporting. So that's all we know at this point.
Stephen.
Peter, in the practices around the country, there is such variability of who sees a person in a dialysis facility month to month that I'm not certain going to the facility and looking for that month validates anything, because the next month it may be someone else seeing that patient, or for 3 months, or, I mean, there is, the practice variation is enormous around the country of how actually this all takes place. And so to rely on just that chart abstraction on a few practices seems to me to be, I'm not sure how helpful.
Can we clarify, is this at the physician level or at the physician group level? Because would that take care of your concern if that was the case? And
it would be better.
It would be better.
It would be better. It doesn't get you to a physician level, but there's a marked variation in physician practice patterns in the facilities.
Ruben?
But at the QRI, if I understand it, a patient is assigned to a physician, and it would go under that physician, which means, on the other hand, I may be seeing 100 dialysis patients, but they're not assigned to me. I would not be doing that. You know, so I'm not sure any measure will be able to adapt to the practices, the 500 different ways of practicing in the U.S., but that's what I think is the PQRI process.
And also that doesn't, I mean, if you're running on someone else's patients and you're not doing a good job, it's their job to put some pressure on you. Hey, you're seeing this patient, you know, so they can feed back to you and say you better, you know, tweak their dialysis prescription. Does that answer your concerns, Stephen?
In very few practices does that happen because, you know, the discontinuity of what's going on isn't...
But this would make you perhaps put in a system to help monitor each other's behavior. Might be a good thing. Okay.
And again, for the measure, and I think this happened yesterday too, aren't we asking the reliability that what's happening out there in the field now? Can this measure get out of the physician's chart and what they're trying to put in? So we can, I'm not sure we're ever going to solve the problem you have here in the near future, but with the tools that we have now, is this measure going to accomplish what we can do in today's world? And I think that's what the question is. And I think going through at least the chart abstraction, going into a physician's office, pulling out that information is about as good as you're going to get for the state of the art today.
Okay. Are we ready to vote on reliability? Okay. Hearing no objection, let's vote.
Florian?
For reliability, low.
That's 21. We have 17 voting moderate, 2 low, and 2 insufficient evidence. Okay, so that would both validity and reliability have passed.
No, we haven't talked.
Oh, that was reliability. Gosh. No kidding.
Just seems
let's move
like
on
that,
to validity.
Right? So they used ACE validity. They had a panel of 19 experts, mean rating of 4.63 over 5.
And this is where we would also ask if there are any exclusions for the measure and if that had been any analysis on exclusions.
I didn't see any exclusions.
So this has the general exclusions of
well, it did say, yeah, and then somewhere about medical or system issue in a flow chart somewhere. It didn't say anything in a narrative.
Right. And in the specifications, it says an exclusion is some documentation of a medical reason for the patient not having achieved 1.2 or greater. And let me see what the... And the details just say that they give one example, patient has residual kidney function, then other medical reasons. And then from the CPT coding standpoint, they put in a modifier that says the patient had an exclusion. But they didn't have any analysis because they added that exclusion after they had done the testing.
Okay. Is anybody concerned about that or would like to discuss the validity?
Okay.
Okay, so let's vote on 2B validity, high, moderate, low, or insufficient evidence.
I'm sorry, before we start the voting, this is Lori and I was disconnected. Did you already start the voting?
We're just voting. We're just voting now. Yeah, we'll restart the voting. We were just voting on validity.
If you would mind just giving a brief summary of the committee's thoughts on validity. I apologize for getting disconnected.
Michael, will you give the high level?
So we talked about the face validity of being used for the measure, and we also talked about there being some denominator exclusions for medical reasons, although the validity of that hasn't been tested.
That was added after the testing, that exclusion. Okay, so let's vote. Validity, high, moderate, low. Insufficient evidence.
And Lorian?
Moderate.
Okay, that's 21. We have 18 votes for moderate, 1 low, and 2 insufficient. So now, I think I can safely say that we have passed the scientific acceptability of measure properties. Looking at disparities, back up one slide. Again, this is similar to the last measure. We don't think there's reasons that there should be disparities, and the data could be examined that way for disparities, right?
I assume they didn't identify any disparities, or
well, they did allude to the PQRI data with the 50%. Percentile, 50% of physicians having performance between 30 and 80%.
But nothing. Differences by race or?
Just general allusions as to there being a performance gap by race.
Okay. Okay. Any reason to vote on this on disparity?
Yeah, what I just heard was that there was a disparity by race.
Okay. All right. So, and the measure is not...
What was the disparity that you're describing, Mike?
When they were talking about, back in the section about high impact and opportunities for improvement, they alluded to data from the 90s about how there was differences in achieving the KD over V goals in African Americans versus other populations.
1894?
No. I think that it was data from 93 and 97. It was in their original application, and they didn't have any newer data in this.
Okay, we'll move on.
Okay, all right. So to feasibility, usability.
I think, like before, it is used.
It is used. Okay, so any other discussion about usability? Okay, let's vote. High, moderate, low, insufficient.
And Lorian?
Moderate.
Fourteen voted high, seven moderate. So it passes usability. Let's go to feasibility.
And it is feasible.
Could you shorten that up a little bit? Tis feasible, maybe. Okay. So this is being done, although it's going to change a little bit. Any other discussion or comments? All right, let's vote. Feasibility.
Lorian? Lorian, feasibility?
Moderate.
We have 13 voting for high and 8 voting moderate. So let's go to the next slide then. We have, it has passed all 4 areas.
Right.
So let's have a final vote. Does the measure meet all of the criteria to be suitable for endorsement? Yes, no, or abstain?
Florian?
No.
We'll wait till we're done the votes.
Everybody voted?
I guess that's going to be... Oh, there's 21. Okay. So 20 yes, 1 no. Alan, you had a comment? No. Okay. So that completes this metric. We still have... 20 minutes before the planned lunchtime. I wonder if we could should we go to 3:21?
Let's go to public comment.
Oh, public
comment. Can I ask a quick question? And I didn't want to bring this up, but Alan started us out alluding to the controversy of ways to measure adequacy, URR, KT over V. We have been used to KT over V for a period of years now, but as recently as instituting the QIP, CMS had in the URR, which seems, I guess, to be going away. Was there science to that transition or just recognition of the obvious? A senator, what are you...
Thank you very much. No, I mean, I think what's more, the more relevant question is whether urea kinetics is really the way to go altogether. Is time alone? Is frequency alone? Is volume alone a better predictor of outcomes than is urea kinetics? Those are really the hot issues that people are taking a really careful look at now. When you look specifically within urea kinetic modeling, there are several ways to do that, and if you speak to the experts, they do tend to agree that URR is not the best measure and probably one of the more specific measures. UKM or De Geertes, so one of those is probably better.
We'll do public comment, get lunch. We'll take a little break and try to resume a working lunch. And given the time frame, I think after lunch we'll move on to vascular access because we have some other measure developers here.
Do you want to do this?
No, I think we'll just, so that we get a little discussion about another topic area before we dispense with everyone. So let's go to public comment. And first of all, is there anyone on the phone that wants to make public comment? Okay, Peter, I'll let you.
Okay, hands.
On behalf of PCBI, I would be remiss not to go back to yesterday's discussion, particularly with this being the last of CKD ESRD review, I think, in the next number of years, even though you mentioned yesterday there could be a period where things could be relooked at, but we're talking about potentially a couple of years before we do this. And yet we may leave this setting without having an important safety metric. And I'm talking about trying to prevent recognizing an increasing incidence of transfusions in patients with anemia management. And without having a lower level, whatever that might be, to try to help all of us make sure that our patients are not transfused. And I'm concerned that we did not have, and that would be obviously a default of those of us who did not present the information, all of the information in front of you, particularly with some of the data, although it not being well controlled, that shows that there is an inflection point at which transfusions do occur in anemic patients. So the not being involved with this process before, I'm trying to search, is there a process where we could be assured that the panel does have all the data as it makes its decision for what would be a safety issue and a reporting issue at a physician level.
Yes.
Thank you. Good morning. Lisa McGonigal from Kidney Care Partners again. National Coalition of Patient Advocates, Healthcare Professionals, Care Providers, and Suppliers, and we work together to improve care for patients with chronic kidney disease. We appreciate this opportunity to comment again. Yesterday we commented on all of the major areas except for vascular access. We're going to use this comment period to address that. We start by saying that we continue our support for the following measures for public reporting only: NQF measure 0251, which is functional AVF or evaluation by vascular surgeon for placement. 0257 is maximizing placement of AVF. And 0259, decision making by surgeon to maximize placement of AVF. KCP continues its support of the following measures for public reporting. And given the strong evidence that reduction in catheter use has a strong positive impact on fewer infections and hospitalizations and lower mortality, KCP also recommends that the measures be used for payment purposes as well. NQF 0256, minimizing use of catheters as chronic dialysis access, and 0262, catheter vascular access and evaluation by vascular surgeon for permanent access. Thank you.
Thank you. Other comments? In person, on the phone? Okay, so let's go get some food. I presume it's ready, and try to reconvene at about 25 minutes to 1 for working lunch.